All right, guys, today we're talking about time and eternity. Time and eternity. And this is week four of a four-week series, Finding Balance, Living a Disciplined Life as We Grow in Christ. So, like 2 Peter 3:18 says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We are choosing to live in certain ways. And so we want to consider how we choose to go about our life. And we want to consider how to glorify God as we live this life. So that's really where we've been going. And you know, week one, we talked about eating and sleeping, right? Eating and sleeping. And Psalm 127 spoke of it being vain to rise early and go to bed late and eat the bread of anxious toil. Anxious toil is where you're not trusting God. You're not resting in the Lord. Because it says that he gives to his beloved in their sleep. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Week two, we looked at exercise and rest. Exercise and rest. And 1 Timothy 4:8, that bodily training is of some value. And it just helps you hear to some extent. But godliness is of value in every way because it holds promise for the present life and also for the one to come. So there's an eternal aspect to godliness. And so we did that. And then week three, we talked about work. This was last week, work and leisure, okay? I didn't want to say work and play, really. I didn't want to use those terms. I want to say work and leisure. And we looked at Proverbs 30, 25 a bit, that ants are weak and they provide their food. They work hard. And then what we're to do, 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 11 and 12, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and to work with your hands as you've been instructed. And to live properly and not be dependent. So each one, this goes along with Galatians in chapter 6, where it says, each one shall bear his own load. Right? Bear one another's burdens, bear one another's overload, but your regular cargo, your regular life responsibilities are yours to fulfill. So today we're looking at week four, last week, time and eternity. Okay, time and eternity. So you're just talking about that for a few minutes. You could call it the tyranny of time and the endlessness of eternity. It's kind of the way I'm going to go with this today. And we're going to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. And so I want to read that first. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 15. If you've never studied Ecclesiastes, you really would be in for a treat. And my guess is that many of us have misunderstood Ecclesiastes and really what the point of the whole book is. And it's really a believer's view of life in light of death. Life in light of death. It's living life backwards, really. In light of dying, how are you going to live? This is a very well-known passage, and I'm going to go ahead and read it. Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 15. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. What gain has the worker for his toil? I have seen the busyness that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceived that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceived that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it, so that people fear before him. That which is, already has been. That which is to be, already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. And we're going to stop there. So verses 1 through 15. And really what I'm going to do is kind of just take us through this passage on kind of a higher level. We're not going to go through, you know, the poetry of verses 1 through 8. We're not going to go through what does it mean to be born? What does it mean to die? We're not going to parse every word here. But I want to point out some things about this. And I want to really look at this idea of time and eternity. And you'll notice that time is in the first 8 verses and really eternity is in verses 9 through 15. And so we're kind of going to go back and forth a little bit. So I'm going to first talk about time, and then we'll shift to eternity. But there'll be a blending of the two, okay? So let's talk first about time, and really the idea that there's kind of a tyranny to time. That time is so consistent. Time is so regular. Time waits for no one. You know, Samuel Rutherford put it really well. The sands of time are sinking. It's like you have an hourglass right in front of you, And the sands are just going through it, and you can't push them back up the chute. They're just down there, okay? And the idea is that time doesn't go backwards. You know, we'd like to go back in time. If someone might ask you a question, what would you do if you could go back to when you were this old and do that over again, if you had a do-over, if you got a mulligan? And, you know, that's not going to happen. That's the conjecture. You can't go back, okay? This is not back to the future. This is not time travel. What this really is, if you think about it, it's an interesting word, but it's rhythmic. Time is consistent, and it just keeps going. It's like walking forward, and it just continues to progress. Now, for a believer, every moment, we are one step closer to home. We are one step closer to our heavenly home. We're citizens of heaven, as Philippians 3:20 tells us. So now, I know if you're really young, and I love the fact that we have so many ranges of ages that come to Friday mornings, and if you're very young, I know you don't really think about dying very often, okay? I just know that. And I know that when I was a kid, I remember thinking about it every once in a while, and sometimes having these really morose thoughts, but for the most part, you're like, what time is the game later, or when are we gonna eat, you know, things like that. Or can I go out and play? And you know, that's the way I thought when I was younger. But the older you get, the more death comes to mind. And it's not just at a funeral. But I will say that funerals get more sobering the older you get. The more you see life as a grave concern, really. And so if we're going to talk about time and eternity, you got to think about Ecclesiastes. Because Ecclesiastes, and I'm going to probably keep repeating this, and I'm the Lord willing, I'm going to plan on preaching Ecclesiastes hopefully sometime next year in 2020. But we're going to talk about time and eternity. You really have to go to Ecclesiastes. And a lot of people have asked, like, why is Ecclesiastes in the Bible? Like, what is this book all about? And is it just about the futility of living life under the sun? You know that phrase, under the sun. And for a long time, I took it this way. I said, oh, this is about the unbeliever's view of life and how futile it is living under the sun. The idea of just here on earth and a soul focus of just being, you know, living on this globe. That's not what this book is about. This book is about a believer living life backwards. That would be a good title for a series, wouldn't it? Living life backwards. It's living life in light of death and really in light of eternity. And so Ecclesiastes is the reflections of an old man, really, a preacher, and he considers the meaning of life. And he sees this futility of chasing the good things of this life, knowing that death is certain. See, that there it is, knowing that death is certain. And it's the person who lives with no fear of God that isn't even thinking about their certain death. All they're thinking about is how invincible they are. You know, until they get hit by a Mack truck. But what for the believer, if you live in the fear of the Lord, I mean, really, you can sum up the Old Testament idea of being a believer by living in the fear of the Lord. It's the one who can truly enjoy God's good gifts. A believer can truly enjoy God's good gifts. And for example, we should remember our Creator in the days of our youth. Okay, and this is what Ecclesiastes says at the very end. And Solomon is thought to be the writer, the preacher, the son of David, the king, in Jerusalem, chapter 1, verse 1. Now, the interesting thing about the title is it's Kohelet, okay? It's an untranslatable title. And by the way, there's no book in the Old Testament that speaks with this tone of voice, the tone of voice that Ecclesiastes has. And the wise man is speaking, okay? The wise man is speaking, and it's almost sounding like Proverbs, and it sounds pretty homespun in terms of wisdom. It's just homespun, down home, you know, deep south wisdom. And it's practical, and it's orthodox. It's very orthodox. And it explores the boundaries of life, and it begins like this. Vanity of vanities. All, this is the best opening line of ever, okay? Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Basically, utter futility. Utter futility. But there is more to it. There is more to it. There's a lot more. So the motto, even the vanity of vanities motto, is really pointing somewhere that we have to look. It's pointing to the fact that there is life and there is death. And you're going to look at it from a number of angles, okay? So I just want to talk about the title, though, Ecclesiastes, Kohelet. It's connected with the Hebrew word for assembling together. Like we're having an assembly together here this morning. But it suggests some sort of office holder in God's assembly. It's not just a collector of sayings. It's not just a collector of wise words. More likely, this is the person that brings together the assembly of God's people and then speaks to that assembly. Therefore, we will say the preacher, right? The preacher, the speaker, the spokesman, speaking for God, timeless, soul-tethering truth. This is what's going on. And what he's saying to us is life is like a treadmill. It's like a treadmill. You're just going and going and going and going. And literally he's saying, I want to get off. Stop this treadmill. I want to get off. I want stop the globe. It's spinning too fast. I want to just step off for a moment. You know, it's like, do they still have the merry-go, what's it called at the park where the thing goes round and round and you get all dizzy? I'm getting dizzy right now thinking about it. You know, back in the old days, it was this metal thing, right? You could really get hurt with this thing if you get drug underneath it. But anyway, you try to get off that while it's spinning. You're just going, the centripetal force and all that. But anyway, he's going like this. He said, I'm busy with unhappy business here on earth, and it's vanity, and it's striving after wind. Chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. And there's this hint of the fall of man all the way through Ecclesiastes. I mean, you just got like just the hint of the fall. You don't make a depressed declaration like that without realizing your sinfulness, okay? And what he's going through is God's the sovereign creator. He's put in place the things in this life. And he wants to teach us to yearn for a better country. He wants to teach us to yearn for heaven. So if you want to boil Ecclesiastes down, there you have it. Live life backwards. Yearn for a better country. So he repeats a phrase over and over again. If you look at the first 8 verses, he repeats a phrase over and over again. There is a time and a time, right? There's a time and a time. Now that can sound really monotonous, right? Time, 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 time. Treadmill, treadmill, treadmill. And it can even seem frustrating or even oppressive, right? And the idea is this. You don't get to choose the situations that come your way. We would like to think that we could harness our life in such a way and even orchestrate it in such a way or even control it in such a way that we can keep certain things in and certain things out. And to some extent, on a micro level, you can do that. You can say, I'm not going to eat Brussels sprouts. I'm going to keep Brussels sprouts out of my life. You're going to be missing out on a lot of good stuff. But you could do that, okay? Or I'm going to keep, you know, cats out of my life. Well, everyone should be saying that, right? But the idea is you don't get to choose your life situations that come your way. The daily grind is God-given. It's God-given. There's a God-given purpose for living, and it has a beginning, and it has an end. This should be very comforting. God has made everything beautiful in its time, and he's weaving this overall masterpiece. Now, let your eyes drop down to verse 11. I just quoted that. He has made everything beautiful in its time. But notice what else it says. And he has put eternity into man's heart. Okay? Eternity is the same word that's in verse 14 where it says forever. Okay? Forever. Same word, but it's used as a noun here in verse 11. It's the same idea in the New Testament of eternal, eternal. Now, this can be used for merely time past or future or for an age, but the contrast of the word time and season, you know, in verse, in all those verses beforehand, points to a stronger sense for this word. God has set eternity in our hearts. And you notice, it says he has set eternity into man's heart. He didn't set eternity into your dog's heart. All right? Your dog's not made in the image of God. I hike with my dog Leela almost every day in the hills of East Orange. And she doesn't have eternity in her heart. She's just chasing squirrels and rabbits and things like that. Animals are immersed in time, fully immersed in time. But we know something of eternity, enough at least to capture a fleeting, you know, glimpse that there are moments here, but there is a forever. And we're like those people that are desperately nearsighted. We inch our way along just little by little every day, and we see enough to recognize that there's something of quality in the world, but this big design of the whole thing escapes us because we don't know what's coming next. We know what God is doing. We have the Word of God. We know what God is doing, but we don't know how he's going to do it exactly. We don't know what is next. We don't know what next thing is going to come. We can never stand far back enough. We cannot get the perspective. We cannot put the wide-angle lens on it enough to even grasp what our Creator is doing from beginning to end. We don't know the details. And so the incomprehensibility of all that can really put you down in the depths if you don't have a Godward orientation in your life. That's why people drive themselves crazy who aren't believers, thinking so much about how does this all work, because they refuse to go to God. It's like an endless Disney movie. It's like, where's God? You know, it's like a Charlie Brown cartoon. Where's the parents? You know, there are none. There's wah, 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 you know. But a believer takes refuge in making the most of time as it is, not in a void. You know, we don't just enjoy doing good. We just don't enjoy doing good. Look at verse 12. I perceive that there's nothing better for them to be joyful and do good as long as they live. Now, as a believer, you don't just enjoy doing good, okay? What you do is you do the best you can, but it's only going to last as long as you live. And it might go a little bit further than you, right? But there's a shadow over everything you do. There's a shadow over everything. The sun is going to set. Nothing that you're doing right now is permanent. Now you're like, well, wait a minute. I'm an inventor. I invented something. I got it patented. Yeah, that's going to run out. Someone's going to find it at a garage sale one day. I'll probably find it at a garage sale one day. You're just filling in time right now. This is what you're doing. You're filling in time. Now that's what the believer has to push against. That's what the unbeliever says. You're just filling in time. And I think the gravity of this needs to just sink into your pores. If you're a believer, you're not just filling in time. But the work you're doing, it's not going to last that far past you. But it's not useless if you're a believer. It's not useless. So you think about this. You have to accept the movement of time. Even the drudgery of it, even the routines. But you're not just filling in time, okay? So I know it goes ebbs and flows, because for an unbeliever, they can think that. But a believer has to think this: I'm on assignment from God. I have assignments from God. Look at verse 13. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. Why? Look at the last phrase. What does it say? What does it say? This is God's gift to man. It's a gift from God. That's what the believer believes. So this is your allotted portion in life. All the drudgery, all the treadmill, all the things that just kind of keep going and going and going. But God does nothing in vain. God does nothing in vain. We might waste time. We waste lots of time. We might do something purposefully. We might do something without purpose. But whatever God does is purposeful. So look at verse 14. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it, so that people fear before Him. So God's plan, unlike ours, God's plans don't get corrected. Okay? You know, He doesn't go to the plan check office at the city and say, are these okay? Hey, by the way, can you all sign off on? He doesn't go to the church and say, by the way, you know, I didn't get a memo from God this week saying, I need Grace Church of Orange to look at something when you're gathering this today. Can you make sure that my plan for this week is all right? It's not going to happen. It just doesn't sound ridiculous. That sounds ridiculous, right? When I said this the other day when you do a Q&A on Wednesday night, I said, the most wise people I know ask wise counsel. The most foolish people I know seek their own advice only, okay? We have to ask for wise counsel. God has no counselors. God has no counselors. God's plans last forever. They endure. They are forever, verse 14. That matches that eternity that He put in our hearts and in verse 11, okay? So we're not living in vanity. We're living for eternity. That's the believer's mindset. If you're an unbeliever, you're living in vanity. If you're a believer, you're living for eternity. You see the difference? Huge difference. It's diametrically opposed to each other. It's east and west, okay? So this entire passage, you think about this. You know what it's talking about? The kindness and severity of God that Romans 11, 22 talks about. Severity towards those who have fallen, God's kindness towards you who are redeemed. You got the earthbound man in light of verses 14 and 15. Listen to this. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added, nothing taken away, so that people fear before Him. Verse 15, that which is already has been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. So the unbeliever is a prisoner in a system. He cannot break or bend. But here's the thing. For everyone, God is behind it all. God is behind it all. You cannot run. You cannot hide. For the Christian man, you read those verses, you should have no misgivings about your life today. You should have no misgivings about your life today. You really shouldn't. Verse 15 assures you that with God, nothing has been overlooked or will be overlooked. That God doesn't abort His plans and God doesn't forget you. There should be some comfort here. So the despair of the preacher in Ecclesiastes is not his despair. It's the despair of the unbeliever. The despair of the preacher in Ecclesiastes should not be ours. We don't need to share the despair of the earthbound because we're citizens of heaven. What we really need to do is live life backwards, to live in light of the end. So let me say a few things in light of all that. First of all, you should have a schedule in your life. You can't just float from, unless you're a genius, you can't just float from one thing to the next and know it all in your head. Have some sign of a schedule to get things done. Don't be lazy. Don't stress yourself out. Just walk with Jesus and use whatever tools you have or can find and prepare to get things done, but live in light of eternity. You've always got to live life backwards. You've always got to live life in light of the end, or else the present could seem like it's only for you, or that it's pointless. You know, by the way, the world isn't a, you know, you're born and then you grow up and then you go, hey, I can do things. But it's not like you get a Lego set and you just get to build whatever you want, okay? Or you go to IKEA and you get, you know, build a piece of furniture and you're like, look, I can just do this and I got this. Well, that's the way a lot of people live life. I got my parts that I know are here. I'm going to orchestrate the way I want. Problem is they build their piece of furniture and a meteorite comes and smashes it in the parking lot. Okay? Because, oh, they didn't realize that was a possibility. God's the only one with the blueprint here. So if you think you're living your life and you got it all planned out, you know, and you're just like, I got it. My 5-year plan, my 10-year plan, blah, 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 blah. You're forgetting James chapter 4 and verse 15. You should say, if the Lord wills, I'll do this or that. Meaning, my plan's out the window if God doesn't will it. And I'm not going to push it if it seems that the door's closing. That doesn't mean you can't have ideas and plans and you know, think about how many people in the world kept going amidst opposition and God used that in great ways. So don't think that means that if you have a little opposition, you're supposed to be a baby and cry and go home. Now, here's what I want to do. I should have said to you today, we're going through Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 15, but we're really going to do a little bit of an overview of the first three chapters. I'm going to take you back in your minds to chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, okay? The thesis. You know, vanity of vanities. Oh, it's vanity. So here's the idea. Here's chapter 1. If you want to get like, what does it mean? Death and your quest for greatness teaches you your part of the generation that came after the last one and before the next. Death and your quest for greatness teaches you your part of the generation that came after the last one and before the next. Yeah, you're just right there in the middle. You're a vapor that appears a little while and then vanishes. They may give you a good headstone and they might remember some cool things you did or said, but that's it and that's all it should be. Chapter 2 explains that all the pursuits and pleasures that we give ourselves to in light of eternity, really, they slip through our fingers with no lasting satisfaction. Case in point, the last gift you received, do you remember it? How long ago was it? You know you're not enjoying it like you thought you would, okay? Chapter 3 then, the preacher's bringing it together, the big picture, the whole of life, individual parts, the seasons of life, and begins to explain why your lack of control over either thing is the very thing that can give you hope. It's the very thing that can give you hope. You see, you can embrace your frailty many ways, and all of them include thinking clearly about time. I got a couple things I'll share about that. It's part of living well to accept two things. You got to accept two things. I am bound by time, number one, and number two, God is not. I am bound by time, God is not bound by time. What we do comes and goes. Remember, what does it say in verse 14? Whatever God does endures forever. See that? A lot of people live their life like this. I'm working on the project of me. I'm working on me. But we're not the architect and we're not the site manager of our life. People say, I'm writing the story of my life. But you're not the main author of that story. So chapter 3, by the way, is a beautiful, beautiful chapter. We didn't look at the rest of it, but from dust man comes and from dust he shall return. Famous words of poetry at the beginning, read at funerals. And just you need to know there's hope and joy to be found, and it's embedded in God's plan from verses 9 through 15. And think about it this way. The poetry in the first 8 verses is followed by a harsh reality in verse 9. What gain has the worker from his toil? You see that? Life has its rhythms. They happen to us without our awareness of what's really going on. Life keeps changing. You don't get lasting success. You don't get feelings of satisfaction. Those are fleeting. We all know this. But you get this great perspective. It's the perspective you get when a believer reads Ecclesiastes and when you read the rest of Ecclesiastes. There's a time to be born. There's a time to die. See, there's a time for judgment. Hebrews 9:27. It's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. So you learn to live by preparing to die by realizing that death means judgment. And judgment is a good thing. It gives your present actions meaning and weight. It gives your experiences and losses, even in injustice, a voice in God's presence. That God is actually aware of what is going on and that he is the vindicator of his own. And you can also realize this. The past is the past. We beat ourselves up over the past all the time. And the past is not forgotten by God. There is a reckoning, right? There is a reckoning. And there's comfort and there's caution in that, is there not? There's comfort that the past is the past. There's caution because there's things we've done in our lives that we're not proud of. This is where a believer runs to the mercy and the grace of God, the shed blood of Christ. So one person said this, time in God's hands graciously apprentices us. Time in God's hands graciously apprentices us. We're being taught by time, and we're being forewarned by time. And that means we're being armed ahead of time as well, because now we can live backwards in light of death, in light of eternity. Right? You want to live well in this life? In time, just realize that that this is His creation, not ours. That we have pieces of life given to us. Things come and go and seasons change, but only God knows exactly where everything's meant to go. In what order, at what time, and why. I love getting ready for a trip, a road trip, and packing the back of the car. Well, it's one of my favorite things. I know where to put everything, and I'm like, I can get all this stuff in and see out the rearview mirror. I do a really good job of it. I'm good at this. I could help you if you need help. If you're the person that has that big bundle on top of your car, you know, the Lord pity your soul, and I can help you. But here's the deal. You got to live in some sense with your view of in the rearview mirror sometimes, right? Because you're like, the past is a caution. But there's a comfort to that because it's the past. But you got to look looking ahead. And it can't just be, well, when I die, there's nothing else. No, there's eternity for the believer. Now, the unbeliever's not thinking about the eternity that waits them in hell, okay? The believer waits for the eternity that's ready for them in the new heavens and the new earth. And so Hebrews 13:8 should be very, very comforting as well. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? For us, there's an expiration date on us, and only God knows it. So we got to be aware. We'd be very aware. And I would just say, shake up your expectations on what it means to live the good life and consider the reality of death and pay attention to your limitations as a human being and receive the wondrous gift of life that God has given you and be free to live wisely and generously and faithfully for God's glory and the good of His world, because eternity is fathomless to mortal man. Now, let me finish up with this, and then we'll go. Then we'll be done. Let's talk about one more thing. Is it time management in your life or time stewardship? We're going to be talking about that in our small groups. Are you wasting time? Are you resting in the Lord? Are you hitting it hard? What are you doing? Is it eternal life that you're looking forward to, or eternal boredom? In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand there are treasures forever. Psalm 16:11. Psalm 23, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Is there a sense of anticipation for you, or is there dread? Is there reluctance or confusion? What is there when you think about eternity? Paul said it this way. I'm a paraphrase. I want to be there, and I want to be here. And I'm hard-pressed, but I'll take whichever one comes my way. And if I'm here, fruitful labor. Fruitful labor. So I'll wrap it up with this. We live in a world of time in light of eternity. This is the believer's mindset. This is the believer's mindset. We live in a world of time in light of eternity. We're told to redeem the time, right? Just eke it out, like squeeze out every drop of every ounce of goodness in the time. But you have to keep an eye on the prize as well. It's like Philippians 3:14, I press on toward the goal for the prize or the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. So just remember that. This is living life backwards. You're a citizen of heaven. You're going to die. You're going to be with Jesus forever. So live now wisely. The believer has the best motive, absolute best motive. All right? So we're going to head and that's going to be it, and we're going to go into our small groups. I want to explain something. It's going to go around your tables. There's a piece of paper, okay? Winston's going to go ahead and pass those out. And I want to show you two things. One that's been immensely helpful to me, that's the one that's like, looks like you're playing tic-tac, you're playing something. You're playing four square. I don't know. Anyway, the little open squares, okay? And then there's one that's like, I'm getting a headache looking at this, okay? All right? So the one that I use most often is the one that doesn't give you a headache, okay? And it's called this. I've got you have two of them on your page, but it's called Keep, Stop, Tune Up, Start. And it's just a way to evaluate your life. I might have brought this up one of the other weeks, but I wanted to give you one of these where you take some time to think and pray and evaluate and consider a role in your life. Let's say you're a son or a father or a husband or a worker, okay? You put that in there as a, let's say, worker. What am I doing that I need to keep doing? And then you go to the right. What am I doing that I need to stop doing? And then you go down to the bottom left. What am I doing that needs a tune-up? And then what am I not doing that I need to start? Okay? This is a great way for you to balance the way you use your time and the way where your heart is at. So where your heart is at with what you do, as well as what you're going to do going forward. I don't do this every week. I do this maybe every 3 months to 6 months. I just go through this. And a lot of times I'll do this as a pastor. It'll help me to organize kind of where I might be out of balance or where I need to focus better, okay? The other side of the page I got from David Murray, who wrote a book called Reset. It's a good book. I would recommend it, Reset. And what the baseline on this is this. Take your eyes to the bottom of the page. God has provided you, if the Lord wills, on an average week, right? You have 168 hours. And then you have 672 hours in a month. And what this is for you to go, let's see if I can budget those hours. And if you go through this and you realize that there's more than 168 in the column of 7 days, you got to adjust. Or if you got like 40, you know, you're like you're not doing anything, right? And then you can do that for a month as well. But I want to mention one thing about it. Notice top left where it says list all your activities, and it says nightly sleep, and it says essential and energy giving. So I put on me, essential is 7, energy giving is 8 and 9. I rarely get 8 or 9. I'm usually in bed for 8 hours nowadays, but I'm only asleep probably, you know, 6.5 to 7 of those, right? It takes you a while sometimes to fall asleep and all that stuff. So put that down, but notice that you do that with your family, your work, even like maintaining things in life, recreation, ministry, and other things. And you'll notice there's a thing that says planned generosity. There's a thing of spontaneous generosity, but also planning ahead. And I just want to remind you of what we did when we went through Titus. In Titus 3:14, let our people learn to engage in good deeds, to meet pressing needs, and not be unfruitful. And the idea that plan ahead to bless others, one of the best uses of your time. Besides being in the Word and prayer and fellowshipping with the Lord, it's planning ahead to bless other people. All right? So let's go ahead and take some time in our groups, and I'll come up at 8 and pray us out. Thanks, guys.